This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, again, from the Beis Medrash in Ar Yitzchak, where there is no Bein Hazmanim. The Shlach Kaddish says that there shouldn't be Bein Hazman. Bein Hazmanim has no basis. I'm not sure how many people noticed that Shlach Kaddish. But by night side, there was full here in Ar Yitzchak. Over here in Ar Yitzchak, there goes that Shlach. There is no Bein Hazman. Okay, having said that, so you know the kinds of relationships where it's always your fault when something goes wrong? It's like when a wife says, "You weren't Marva Sedra in the kitchen table on Friday before Shabbos, I would have never ordered the wrong pot." You know what I mean? Or the husband that says, "If you weren't on the phone, then you would have seen that I'm making the wrong turn. You wouldn't have been in this mess." And the wife is thinking to herself, "So help me if I ever correct in which way he turns," right? There are those people that are never wrong. It's always someone else's fault. So this wagon driver is driving and the horses start running. So what does he do? He's so angry at the horses that they're running, he starts whipping them even harder, which of course did not solve the problem. And the horses go flying off the road, so he whips them even harder, and as it, like, the wagon turns over like 100 times, another guy that was in the train, and he saw the train was going too fast, so he thought it'll smother the fire by shoveling more coal onto it. So that the wagon's going really fast and crash. And the wagon driver turns around, he starts screaming at his passenger. He says, "If you would have said Tfilas Haderech B'Kavana, this would have never happened." And the passenger, he says, "Well, you daven with Kavana?" "Yes, the whole Shemoneh Esrei daven with Kavana." He says, "You said Atochainain Adam Das with Kavana. Doesn't seem to have helped you much," he said. So I want to tell you a fascinating thing. Reb David, just joined us. I'm talking about Reb David Feinstein, Lozan Gesundstark. Somebody told me, he was sitting by the shir, and someone told me this, and a man brought up an interesting shiloh. He asked this theoretical question. Listen to this question. Suppose that you could pick anyone in the last 2,000 years and invite them to your Shabbos table. They'll come down from Olam Haba, and they will sit down by your Shabbos table. Who would you pick? How's that for a shiloh? Rafal, who would you pick? Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh, last 2,000 years. Right. Yeah. Who would you pick? Rafal, yeah, what do you think?
Rashi.
You would say Rashi. Ah, Yeshver Rashi, and you can ask all the kashas you always wanted, right? Okay. You know, who was the first one that learned Chumash with Rashi? Rashi's father, right? Okay. Reb David, who would you pick? If you could, at last 2,000 years, you could pick anybody to come to your Shabbos Seuda, who would you pick? Who would you?
I'd pick the Lubavitch Rebbe.
Okay. All right. I hear.
Oh, you know something?
No, you only have one chance. That's it, one shot. Next time. Okay. All right, Who's your second shot?
Rambam.
You picked the Rambam.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Moshe, you picked the Gra. Uh-huh. Imagine we all got together this whole shot. It would be a really interesting shot. Right? I once heard from a Batchan, who was a Rebbe Shechassan, all the Rebbes were related. So he said, by a chuppah, all the grandfathers come down. He's like, all the Rebbes were related. So he said that all the Rebbes, all the way up, everyone's interrelated. He said, the whole Olam Haba emptied out. The only one that was left was the Eibishter and the Gra. That's what he said. Okay, so now, want to try? Who would you pick if you had a choice the last 2,000 years? Think about the Rambam. It's amazing how people think about the Rambam. Okay. Here, Mardechai, here's the Shiloh. You have a choice. Someone in the last 2,000 years will come from Olam Haba to your, it's because you gave $25 to some smice, they offered this. Will come to your Shabbos table. Who would you pick? Who would you pick to come? It's in theory, so don't get too excited about it. Yeah, a good caterer, yeah. Who would you pick? No, you have to think about it. Too many people to choose from. Okay. Who would you pick? What's your name?
Yosef.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Yosef is
more. Yosef is Yosef Etzadi. You would pick Yosef Etzadi. Yes. Okay. Rav Yitzchak Kaduri. Hilly, who would you pick? Rav Moshe. Okay. Interesting. Yes. Who would you pick? Who would you pick? The Ritva.
The Gra.
Oh, the Gra. Okay. Together with Moshe. Oh, you could have the Suda together. Yes. Yes. Yeshua. Last 2,000 years, you can get anyone from Gan Eden. Who would you pick? Rav Arya Kaplan. Okay. Very interesting. You would say Rav Avigdor Miller. Okay.
And
you only got one. You only like lazy. Relax over there. Let's leave some people. You need a mezumin in Gan Eden. You know what I mean? Okay. Who would you pick?
Probably go with the Rambam.
Oh. The one could pick Seder Moya. The other could pick Nezakim, maybe Shaiftim. And last but not least, Maishi. Maishi, who would you pick? Maishi? Last 2,000 years, anyone from Gan Eden could come to your Shabbos Suda. Who would you pick? Don't get so... Yeah. You want to think, Eim Asicha Masuda. Okay, I got it. So after everyone gave their... This person told me one person's picked the Rambam. A lot of people picked the Rambam. After everyone gave their opinion, so Reb David said, they asked Reb David, so who would the Rosh Yeshiva pick? He said, listen to this answer. He said, I would pick the most hungriest person in the last 200 years and have him come to my Suda so he could eat. The person that was the most hungry. The Rambam doesn't need to, I'd be matriach the Rambam to come to my Suda. Rav David Feinstein. What? To be able to say, oh, you know, I had but my, that would be for my covet. What do I get out of that? I would pick the person in the last 2,000 years that was the most hungry and take him. Now, really, this is a mindset. Okay? Yes. Made a carbon. I understand that. But there's a certain mindset. Okay? How we define our essence or our purpose. Now, Rav Melech Biederman always says, this person's eating. You say, you heard so-and-so Nebuch, terrible tragedy. His house burnt down. Oh, Nebuch. And he keeps eating, you know? You heard so-and-so died. Oh, he keeps eating. Because you heard your next-door neighbor, yeah, he won the lottery, and the guy stops eating. Really? Oh, like, oh, no. Like, you know. He's going to have so much of a nicer house than me. Like, oh, no. Like, yeah. All of a sudden, he stops, right? So, this, I think, try to touch this up. Because the answer caught me by surprise. Usually when people tell me this kind of stories, it's almost like you can figure out what he's going to say. That answer really caught me by surprise. And I think it's a way of life. Business people say that the customer is always right. Because it's in your ultimate interest that the customer should be right. Besides for being practical. Let me be practical. What does being practical mean? I'm by Ocean Parkway, and the light turns red, and of course you stop by Ocean Parkway a little bit before, because there's an Ayin Roya in certain places, so Mamela, it's Ma'ori Yerushimayim, so Mamela, you stop a little before. And I can't believe it, this guy on a skateboard zooming into the intersection, and the cars are already moving in both ways. And I'm like, oh, I can't see this. And he chapped what he was doing. Of course, he was on his headphones. And I noticed at the last minute, he did what was really a life-saving move. Instead of continuing across Ocean Parkway, he did a 90-degree turn. And just started going together with the traffic. Like he just swung to the left and started going with that. If he would have gone straight, it would have been kaboom. But he just turned and started going with the traffic. So I said, imagine in life, not that you should try this, but imagine in our relationships, we say, you know what, I'm not fighting. Let me just turn and go along over here. So someone told me that he's in a hospital room visiting someone, and the doctors and nurses are having a problem with a patient who refuses to take his meds. He says, no, I don't want to take it. No, I don't want to take it. The doctor says, you have to take your meds. No, get out of this room. I can't stand the sight of you. What? I'm trying to help you. Why are you talking to me that way? And one doctor walks out, insulted. The other doctor, I want to get out of here, he's screaming. One doctor comes in, he goes, I want to get out of here, I can't stand the sight of you. He goes, well, you take your medicine, you'll get better, you'll be able to get out of here. I want you to get out of here also, just take the meds. Right? Instead of being busy and how dare you talk to me that way. I'm here trying to help you. I'm working long hours, underpaid, understaffed. Stop it. Why is everything about me? Deal with the situation. Deal with the reality. A man came to the Chavetz Chaim. said, "Give me why can't Hashem give me a little bit of the reward of one mitzvah? I'll have a house to live in, I'll have parnas, and then I could sit and learn." So the Chafetz Chaim explained to him, you can't cash it down here in this world. Go into a grocery store with a $20 million check and buy a Coke. Ask for change. You can't, right? Talmud Devar says one of Hashem's chesed is that he doesn't offset averus against mitzvahs. Take off some averus. I remember when I was a kid, there was this thing going around, which is not true, by the way, that if you kill a spider, you have seven mitzvahs and one averus. You ever heard that? Because the spiders help burn the Beis Hamikdash somehow. Not sure exactly how. Okay? That was a little kid's old wives' tale. So this is Shabbos afternoon, and this kid is like stepping on spiders. So he said, "What are you doing? It's Shabbos." He goes, "Okay, so I have seven mitzvahs and two averus." You know, he's still five mitzvahs ahead. It doesn't work that way. Because Baruch Hu doesn't offset mitzvahs to averus. If we understood the schar for mitzvahs, if we understood how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates for us to live up to the purpose of our creation, and that is to focus on not being right, but doing the right thing, then our life would be very, very different. If you think about what Rav David said, I'm not interested in what people are going to say about me. Centerfold of the newspapers. Imagine the Rambam visits so and so. That doesn't help me up there in Shemayim. That's not going to help me in the world that lasts forever. But take a yid that's hungry. So I read in Rav Arya. Who said Rav Arya Kaplan? Oh, he sure walked out. But so there's this book, Encounters. It's a fantastic book. So he has over there a story about an Austrian ornithologist. Anyone know what an ornithologist is?
I think they study bugs.
Study bugs, right.
Something like that.
He studies birds. Studies birds, right.
Birds,
right. No, you see your story with a thesologist? You know what a thesologist is? Anyone know what a thesologist is? Mussels. Okay. Anyone else? Anyone know what a thesologist is? A thesologist. Never heard of that. He's a good thesaurus. Know what a thesologist is? No? What he does? So, according to Yitzi Erbs, he told me this story once, I remember from Perche. This guy came in and said he's a thesologist, and people asked him, what does a thesologist do? He said, he doesn't say. He doesn't, can't say. So, meanwhile, there was the president of the university, and he was like so embarrassed, and he looked like, he had to resign his job. And then the mayor came in, Shalom Aleichem, we finally have a thesologist in town. He says, what do you do? What is a thesologist? You don't know. They said, started. Mayor doesn't know what a thesologist is. Anyway, the mayor, to make a long story short, the mayor is gone, the top officials are gone, had to resign. Finally, it came to the king. And the king grabs this guy and says, you tell me what a thesologist is, all right? Or else. He goes, in order for me to tell you, you know, you have to take me on a ship, to go onto a ship, you have to give him bags of gold, And he goes, you're running out of time. And he says, now watch. And he jumps into the water, and he goes, this is a thesologist. He says, swims off, right? That's what he does. That was his story. Okay. So, we're not talking about thesologists, we're talking about or gishmacher. He had different versions. Machlokes Ashkenaz Sfarad, which nusach. But an ornithologist is a person that studies birds. So, Professor Otto Koenig of Vienna, good old Otto. So what he did, this is a good job, it's a lot easier than being an accountant or working in a grocery store, I'll tell you one thing. He took a large colony of, hope I'm pronouncing this right, egrets?
Egrets.
Egrets is a? It's a bird.
Well,
it's a bird.
Sea-related.
A sea-related bird. But according to this, it's a type of bird that is extremely loyal to its species. They stay in colonies and they, a lot of achtos in, how do you pronounce it? Egrets?
Egrets,
yeah. So what he did was he took a bunch of these egrets, birds, and he did a study. And he allowed the birds to wallow in total luxury. Total luxury. All the food they needed, all the water they needed, endless nest building materials. And after a while, he began to notice that in this group of birds, in the case study, that the care for their young was haphazard. The eggs were pushed from the nest and broken. The birds learned little about fending for themselves. The adult birds, okay, were still being fed like infants by parents and grandparents from the old school before the study. And the younger birds that grew up in this study pecked the older ones to death. So it's what the Chayvus, in other words, he created a Dor HaMabul. That's what he did. He took these birds and took away any sense of responsibility from them, and the results were disastrous. It's what the Chayvus Lubavitch says. If we would not have any issues in our life, it would be Dor HaMabul. Now, so we try to put things into perspective. The difficulties in our lives are the only reason we can be who we are. So the Gemara says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu tried to get Yeravim ben Nevat to do tshuva. And it says, Tav soili Yeravim bebigdoy, Kadosh Baruch Hu grabbed Yeravim by his beged, va'amaloy Hashem said to him, Chazar bach do tshuva. Okay. Let's backpedal here a little bit. Who was Yeravim ben Nevat? Son of Nevat, right? Who was Nevat? Nevat was Sheva ben Bichri. He had rebelled against David HaMelech because he had some kind of a nevuah or a vision or something that there's royal blood in his veins. So he figured, he was not realizing that it goes on Yeravim. He didn't know that his son eventually would be the Melech. Okay? Nevat means he saw Lashon of Hibit, but he didn't know what he was seeing. Which is much better not to see than to see when you don't know what you're seeing. So Yeravim stood up to Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech opened, it was opening day of the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo married Bas Parai on the same day, and she did a shtickle on him. She put a curtain around his bed with the stars, so he thought that it was still night, and she came late, and he gave it to her. And he built a palace for Bas Parai, and he gave him Musar. He was the Kana, Yeravim ben Nevat was Shlomo, how dare you? So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, hey, we'll see what happens when you become king. Yeravim ben Nevat was a Talmud of Achia Shaloni. Chia Shaloni lived very long, from 60 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim. He was born, he lived until the Tkuf of the Malach. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said that his schus and the schus of Chia Shaloni is enough to protect all the generations from Avraham Avinu until Mashiach. In Hasidic legend, he was the Baal Shem Tov's Rebbe, however that works. When Yeravim ben Nevat was young, he was baki in almost as much as Chia Shaloni himself knew. It says, "Kol Talmud Chacham sheba oisai dar." Any Talmud Chacham in that generation, nidmu lefneim, compared to Achia and Yeravim, were compared to asve hasada, to the grass of the field. And what kind of generation are we talking about here? Right? Talking about the story goes that somebody once came to the Chayz of Lublin. He said it was like a neshama. He said, "You got to help me." He says, "I've been on this world 7 times. Each time, I was killed by peasants that threw rocks at me." He said, "Why'd you get to?" Like this thing. He said, because I was the first one that threw a stone at Zechariah Novi. At Zechariah Novi. So he said to him, could you be mispowel for me? So the Chayza tried to evoke his Indian of Kabbalah's tick. Shama should have a tick, and he started to laugh. He said, that's what you're doing for me? He said, in my days, the shoemakers knew how to do that. And we're talking about many years before Zechariah, right? And the Malachi Ashara said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about Yeravim, the person that's going to set up 2 golden calves and force the Jews to bend down to bow down to them. You're going to reveal to him Meiser Markava, the Sidus Nestarim, all the secrets of the heavenly throne. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, what is he now? Now he's a tzaddik, and that's the rule. Kadosh Baruch Hu judges by who we are now. So Shlomo HaMelech passes away, and who takes over after Shlomo? What was Shlomo's son's name? Anybody? Rechavim, right. Rechavim was as a so-so. And the big mistake that he made is he had 2 sets of friends. He had Shlomo's old school, and he had his new young, whippersnapper friend. And what happened was, the Aseres HaShvatim came, and they said, listen, your father was a very popular king, but he really taxed us hard, and somehow, his charisma carried the taxes. You're not your father. Give us a break. We live so far from your Shalayim, and we need the tax money to govern ourselves. Can you? So he asked advice. The Shlomo's council said to him, listen, Rechavim, you're a new king. You got to win the confidence of your people. Give in to them. And his young friend said, nah, you showed them who's boss. You threatened them. They dare. You're going to double their taxes. Just let them dare, So the Gemara darshins on this, stira zekanim binyan. When there's a kanim, want to take something apart, that's called building. And binyan na'orim stira. When the young ones say, no, we're going to build for you, that's taking apart. So when they said, I'm not going to, he warned them and threatened them, they broke off, they went to Yeravim, and they asked him if he'll be the king over the Aseres HaShvatim. This was, of course, a punishment for David HaMelech, that he was Mekabel Lashon Hara, when he was running away, because you makabel lashonar, your malchus will be divided. Now, so Yeravim wasn't so quick to accept it. He made a meeting, and he asked like this, are you totally committed to me? He said, yes. He had Rishoyim and Tzadikim. And he said, if I tell you to serve idols, will you listen to me? And the Tzadikim got up and left. And the Rishoyim said, it doesn't mean it. Just needs the loyalty to be able to introduce his malchus. Okay, so somehow, but then afterwards they realized that he meant it. And afterwards, what happened was, they started coming to the base of Mikdash, and Yeravim, who's king over 10 Shvatim, and Rechavim has only 2 Shvatim, and Yeravim wanted to go to war, but not everybody was so quick to go to war then. To their credit, Shevadan didn't want to go, even though they felt that they were the ones that would have the biggest gripe against him. But Akulpanim, when he came to the base of Mikdash, so Yeravim had a problem. His problem was that he wasn't allowed to sit down. Because it says, En Yeshiva Lazara, Ela L'malchei Beis David Bilvad. So when he saw he's standing there, Rechavim is sitting, so he said, no going to the base of Mikdash anymore. And not only that, he asked the people to go to be Oyle Regel, and he gathered everyone together. He said, who was the greatest generation? He said, the Dara Midbar. Knew if the Dara Midbar did an eagle, so we should follow their footsteps. So he made these two big golden calves, these Egli Azov. I mean, this is who you write. He's the symbol of Chayte Machte Sarab. And what does it say? Kadosh Baruch Hu is tough as bebigdoi. Kadosh Baruch Hu grabs his baggage, whatever that means. It says, Chazar b'cha, do tshuva. Yeravim, do tshuva. And if you do tshuva, ani v'ata, me and you, uben Yishai, yitayel b'ganed. We're going to go. So what was his question? Me b'rush. Who's going to walk first? Ben Yishai is going to walk first, or I'm going to walk first? So he said, Ben Yishai b'rush. So he said, no deal. And Yeravim, who was just at the brink of being in the greatest Olam Haba that was Shayach, would go in the opposite direction. So, of course, there's the famous Reb Chaim Shmulevitz who says, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Ani, I, Va'ata, and you, Uben Yishai. So the order was Hashem, Yeravim, and Ben Yishai. Why was he asking me Barash? So he said, he was so excited, he said, let me hear that again. That's when he blew it, you know? That's when he lost it. So be it as it may be. So, of course, what does it mean, Tofas Bevigdo? It's not Shayach HaMetzias. So the Maranayim says, he says, Yeravim, I know what you're going through. I know you're Yetzirah. I mean, we don't have this Yetzirah. Because we're not a king. You know, we don't know what it is. The Gemara says, wild horses couldn't drag me to become Rosh Hashiva. Once I became the Rosh Hashiva, if someone would have threatened my job, I would have dumped hot water on him. You know, we don't have this in sign. It's a different sign. And here you're talking about Yeravim, and all of his knowledge. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you think I'm writing you off? I know what you're going through. So Tafas Bibigdoi. Hashem said, says the Maranayim, you can take all of your emotion and convert it to bracha. All the pain you're feeling. How could it be? It's not fear. Rechavim is ahead of me. You can take, I'm losing the malchus. I have to be king. I have to be. I'm losing the good thing. He's king. I'm not king. I'm not king. You can take all of that frustration and convert it to bracha. And you're ahead of David HaMelech. But he couldn't get himself to do it. So this famous story in the Sefer Reishis Chachma, where this person is the princess is traveling down, and he yells out from the stands, from the grandstands, "Hey, you want to marry me?" And she laughs at him and says, "Yeah, sure, meet me in the cemetery." And he thought that she was serious. So he goes to the seminary. And he's in a cemetery. Did I say meet me in the seminary? Anyway, he goes to the cemetery and he's sitting there. Finally, after like it's raining and pouring, after like 6 days, he says, "I think she was joking." But he said that in him was such a ahava that had built up that he really thought he was going to marry the princess. That somehow he managed to convert that ahava. He said, "What a waste of ahava! It just turns you into a fool." That he converted that ahava to avodas Hashem, and it says he was nesalab madrigosai. And this is what Hashem is saying to Yeravim, says the Maranayim. I know what you're going through. I know your frustration. I know your pain. Convert it to bracha. Don't think. Don't think about how can I finally get my picture in the paper. Think. Just say, let me take all that power and how can I use it for someone? Don't be right, do right. And I'm telling you, and I'll take you with open arms. So, there was a Yid, Rabbi Avram ben Yomtev HaKoyen, Kohn. And he was a great Baal Machnas Eurech in Preshburg. So much so, the minig in Pressburg was, it's hard for us to fathom this, try to understand this, that, you know, people didn't have where to be for Shabbos. They were literally on the street. There were wayfarers that wandered from town to town, so they came to Shul in Pressburg. When the davening was over Friday night, the wayfarers lined up by the door, and the minig was that as people left, you took a wayfarer home with you, took an oirach home with you. Some people took two. So, suffice it to say, that the more respectable, neat-looking archim were the ones to go first. And the ones that were like a little disheveled or a little bit too many screws, missing some screws, too many screws, something wasn't right, or perhaps an offensive odor emanated from them, or whatever the case was, they were the ones that were left. So this Reb Avram, Ben Yamtev HaKoyen, who was from the richest Jews in Pressburg, always waited till the end. Like he was Mavr Sedri, he waited to the end, because when he left, he wanted to take with him the toughest of the archim. And he would come in, and the people that had to clean up would complain. They said, "You're not just bringing home an oirach; you're bringing him a boy sermis kolchai sayar." You know, like you know what's crawling on the guy. You know, we're busy delousing the chairs and everything else for who knows how long. Can you bring home some of the other guests? And he said, "Well, the mitzvah of achnasas archim is the difficult mitzvah, not the other part." Anyway, so his son said that this Avram ben Yamtev HaKoyen, the Nazis came into Pressburg. And he went from concentration camp to concentration camp, and he survived. And he said one of the reasons that he survived is that the people around him in the concentration camp, lice was a very, very serious problem. The lice and the bugs and the ticks and all of that was, and it carried, besides the mishunadik of discomfort, but it carried all kinds of diseases. And you know, was a primary source of typhus and so on. Imagine going for 5 years without being able to wash yourself. And the showers was not a good thing in Auschwitz. And he said he never had a lice on him. Never. Even though he was totally surrounded by it. He was keenum from his right, keenum from his left, in front of him, behind him. So he said that he felt that was one of the reasons he survived, literally. And he said, Vade, it's because he brought those lice into his house. That's why now they had no shlita on him. Now try to think about this. The more we are meiser nefesh ourselves on this world, it doesn't have to be so much to invite outsiders, which, if your family is up to it, fine. But even in our internal relationships, the lower you're willing to go, even if you're getting slapped across both cheeks to maintain shalom, then the greater power you have, then the greater yira you have. Tafas bebigdai, in the thing that bothers you the most, and the thing that's the most painful to you, your greatest area of frustration, turn it around. And you have, and in this inyan, you're going to have your greatest hashgacha. So the Maranayim brings from the Baal Shem Tov. The Pasuk says, Mashgiach Menachalaynes, which means what, Maishi? Mashgiach. Shemesh is watching from the window, right? Meitzes Menachrakim, he is, Mardechai, steering from the crack. Sorry, just thought I was in 8th grade there for a minute. I don't know, it's not going around. Okay. So he says like this, that Lemaisa, let's say, for all practical purposes, you signed for your yeshiva that you have no smartphone and you have no access to internet and so on and so on, and you don't because your computer or your phone is in a room and you sold that room together with the chametz on Pesach. So really, you don't really have it because you were makna it to someone else. It didn't lie. And then you really want to go into the room and watch a good movie, and your kids are out and they're in camp, so it's good. What if one of your cousins comes by? What if one of the neighbors comes in? Not everyone is so nizer in the inyanim of Lashon Hara over here, you know. And you start walking up there. You know, some people are just, how does that story go? There was this judge or dayan that wasn't exactly very honest. So he had these big boots, and each side said their thing, and they would drop coins into his boot, and he would lift his feet to see which is more heavier. And that's how suddenly he saw it that way, and that way, and that way. You know? So finally, this is one real good din Torah was going back and forth, and he's like, shouldn't say the entire judgment. And finally he like manages to walk into the next room, and he takes out one boot, coins, takes out the other boot, a bunch of rocks come rolling out. And he goes, Shakronim! How could they live in such sheker? Right? You always see, it's very easy to see someone else's chasrayin, someone else's thing. Okay, so you're going into the room, and you're going to watch a movie. And all of a sudden you hear the door downstairs. Who's that? Right? You're very scared. Who you're scared of? So listen to these words. The Maranayim brings in the Baal Shem Tov, though he doesn't particularly use this mashal. Mashgiach min achaloines, meitzes min achrakim. Ki afilu b'shosha rosha hoylech lasis aveira. Even when the rosha goes to an aveira, b'cheder miyuchid in a certain cheder, nefelis all of yura. There's a pachad that falls on him. Umazdamalo, and he thinks ki ilu roya oisei shum adam. Oh no, who's that? What the shadow by the window? Every second you think someone's looking. So it's a yira. And the reason that Kadosh Baruch Hu does it, because you could take that yira and convert it into Yerushalayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving you that yira. Oh no, someone's coming. Someone saw me. And then you can go a step further and say, but Hashem sees me. So Hashem gives you a smaller level of yira in order for you to be able to convert it to a higher level of yira. So in other words, Hashem says, Mashgiach min achalaynais. Umeitzitz min achrakims. And it gives you a little bit of a pachat. Someone's looking. Ah! And therefore you have a possibility. And the same is true for yira, and the same is true for ahava. That the idea is to take the ahava and convert it to ahava satira, ahava Hashem, ahava Yisrael, ahava to help people. You can't extinguish it. You have to convert it. Now, the Yidden had this koyach. They had this koyach that any ahava that came their way, they sent it toward mitzvahs. That's how they dealt with their Yetzirah. If the Yetzirah tried to generate in them a wrong kind of love, love for davening, love for learning. It's easy to do if you have Moshe Rabbeinu there, right? And you're in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Bilam, one of Bilam's tremendous power, his modus operandi was that he knew the Rega Shalzan. He hacked into Shemayim, and every day in Shemayim, the Gemara says, is a Rega Shalzan. There's one moment in Shemayim where, why are you doing that? It's like a pachad, you know? Okay? Most of the time when I do that, everyone jumps up. But Baruch Hashem, people are sleeping so good over here, no one even knows. Just letting you know. Anyway, so I guess they're used to it. But Al Kulpanim, so there's a Rega Shalzam, you jump up. Now, if you curse someone during the Rega Shalzam, you get in a curse, that curse is going to happen. And that was Bilam's thing. So what did Hashem do? No Rega Shalzam. No Rega Shalzam. Says Reb Tzadik, that's why, really, the Maranayim, also many Chassidish Aswarim, that's why Bilam saw, Hashem took away the Rega Shalzam. So what did he do? He gave the Eitzah with his Nus with the Benoist Mayav. Gave the Eitzah, the Benoist Mayav will entice them, and that's going to be their undoing. Normally, it wouldn't have worked, because the Yidden had a power, the purpose of this Rega Shalzam is, it puts enough Yerushalayim into you, that you can reroute the Ahava to Gashmi, stick of things to Hashem. I'll try to give you an example. If you want to be a good Rebbe, okay? I said this a couple of weeks ago. In the good old days, in the mikveh, in the morning, there used to be a mikveh yid. What was the job of the mikveh yid? He sat there, gave you a towel, you took the money from him. There was a human face, there was a human being to talk to before ATM machines. And he said to you, what's the matter? Why do you look so sad this morning? He said to the mikveh, why do you look so sad? And he sold whatever it was, the morning, the Yiddish paper, and he sold you shampoo and soap and this and the end. If you really liked you, he didn't yell at you for putting that second towel on the floor under your feet. He was the guy. And if you didn't have money, he would say, I can't go without money. I'll pay tomorrow. Whatever. No, B'Shem, I finished, but you always got in. Anyway, you always let everyone in. Right? That was the mikveh. Now they have like turnstiles. Turnstile. Swipe the turnstile, that's it. That's it. Most places. No? Most places don't have turnstiles? All the mikvahs I know have turnstiles, anyway. And they're getting more and more sophisticated. Well, besides those 20, the other ones have turnstiles. So, anyway, and then you swipe your card, and really, within 20 minutes, you got to transfer it to one of those mikvahs anyway. But that works. Now, nobody gets in without paying, because the turnstile has no rachmanis on you. It's much more... Okay, that's true also. It's much more efficient. It's much, much more efficient. But you don't have the... It's always like to say to Rebbeim that you can't run a classroom only on love. In this classroom, no negativity. You can do whatever you want, right? 2 days later, the kids are jumping all over, jumping out the window, turning over the stairs, you know? No negativity, you don't have a classroom. On the other hand, there has to be a habit. There has to be the human touch. So we say, like the trick of a good Rebbe is... You have to be both a mikveh yid and a turnstile. You got to know when to be a turnstile. No. There has to be a certain set of rules over here. But you have to have sechel. You have to have sechel to be the gabe, like to open the turnstile wherever you are. So the Rega Shalzam was the turnstile. In other words, there's a moment in our lives, a moment of pachad. And if you think about this every day in your life, there's a second you're worried about something. A little, what's that? Oh, Baruch Hashem. There's something. That little yira keeps us in check. Without that yira, we would not be able to fight off our typhus. We would be those birds. We would be the Dara Mabel. And that's why Bilam, when he saw there was no Rega Shalzam, so what did he do? He gave the Eitzah. So what did Pinchas do? Pinchas saw that Hashemayim, just using this as a figure of speech, is stuck between a rock and a hard place. If they reinstitute the Rega Shalzam, Bilam could curse. If they take away the Rega Shalzam, so what did Bilam, Pinchas do? Pinchas instituted the Rega Shalzam on his own by virtue of his own actions. And therefore Rashi says, what does Rashi say? But what was the greatness of Pinchas? But Kanayas Kenasi Shayali Lichas. That he avenged the thing that really I should have done. But he did it instead of me. He instituted that Rega Shalzam on that given moment. Now, so I heard a beautiful story. Someone told me that someone came to him and said, you know, a boy came to him and said, I'm looking for a Shidduch. It's not happening. Maybe you can give me a Talmud Chacham and I'll support him. He should be able to sit and learn for 3 weeks. And that's chus, I should become a chassan. So he said, that's a very good thing, you should do that. But I think if you want a real chus, take an Am Haaretz and get him to learn. So he says, where do I find an Am Haaretz? So the guy said, yeah, look at that one. This guy's not, and he said, the guy, after 3 weeks, the guy became a chassan. Because it was a real Am Haaretz? No, chassan. The guy's not an Am Haaretz. But the idea is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, this toughest bebigdoy is all of us. The Kadosh Baruch Hu says, take you in your worst state, and you can convert it to bracha. That's what the nesiyon is. That's what the difficulties in your life are there for. It gives us the opportunity to be able to make that connection. There's a little bit of an amaretz in all of us. You know, I was watching today. Where's Menachem? The episode where they put in a drop ceiling. Oh, we have plenty of construction workers, right? So they have to put these little poles in, right? They tie them, and then you think of things. Now, if the roof is not an even roof, so. Right, so you have shorter poles and longer. These little, what are those poles called? Those little rods. Right. So they make it level. They have this light that figures it out. But in order to do it, because the ceiling is not straight, or there's different rooms that you're combining, so some have to be long, some have to be short. So try to figure this out. You're coming in, and you see this guy walking with a bunch of different rods, all different sizes. Why do you have a bunch of rods, all different sizes? Because I need it to be straight. No, that doesn't make it straight. Yes, it does. Yeah, but either way, if it would all stay the same size, then you're not gonna have a straight ceiling, right? So in our lives, the way we look at the world, I say we want everything to work out our way. Because Baruch Hu, why do I keep bumping into things? Why? I'm not talking about the traumatic situations, but the everyday ups and downs in life. Why can't things just go straight? Why can't a simcha go straight? Why can't a business day go straight? And the answer is because Baruch Hu says, this is straight. I'm straightening you out by making it easier, hotter. That's how it evens out. That's how it works. The Sefer Ikrim says, how does davening help? Kadosh Baruch Hu made a gzeira. How does davening help? And the answer is, davening changes your position. Kadosh Baruch Hu made a gzeira for you. Once you start davening, you become a new person. So we readjust. Now you need a shorter stick. Now it's different, right? How does the story go? That king, someone stole his ring. He called in his ministers. Who stole my ring? He said, okay, he gives each one a stick. He says, the one that stole the ring, you should know the stick is going to be an inch shorter tomorrow. Come back tomorrow with the stick. Everyone says, yeah, sure, one of those stories. Of course, the guy that stole it says, not true. Keeps looking at the thing. It's not true. He keeps measuring it. It's not true. What? It's true. It's not true. He wasn't taking any chances. He measures an inch and chops it off. Sure enough, he comes back the next day. He's the only one with a shorter stick. So he's arrested. So the Rebbeinu Shem is making us straight. That's what he's doing. He's making us straight. If not for that, we wouldn't be here. There's little children in Yemen. The Rebbe had only one Aleph Bina. So some of them only learned Aleph Beis upside down. Do we think, what are you doing? Your sitter is upside down. No, for me it's straight. Depends where I'm coming from. This is how he understands it. Now, Pinchas, right, was a very unfortunate situation for Pinchas. It looks like that Pinchas was caught up in a bureaucracy. See, technically, in order to be a Kayan, you have to have from the Shemen HaMishcha, special oil, and the command was to anoint Aaron, Nadav, and Viola, Zisama. all subsequent children are going to be born are automatically kayanim. Pinchas was nishtei nishtei, he's stuck in the middle. Before this deadline, before the next deadline, he can't register anywhere. So obviously Pinchas says, why did Hashem do this to me? What kind of mistake? What's been a mistake? I was born the wrong time, right? He's caught in the middle. And the din is, says the Tiferes Shloim, a kayin shahareges a nefesh, a kayin that kills someone can't do the avodah. And now, all of a sudden, he has this nesayin, and Pinchas says, oh, now for sure I'm doomed. And he says, you know what? My job is not to be a kayin. My job is to do what's right. He asks Moshe Rabbeinu what to do, and he does it. And if that's chus, what happens? He becomes a kayin. Pinchas, you could have never become a kayin if not for this. So all of the frustration that Pinchas had his whole life, and his ultimate nesayin, where he was willing to give it up, is what made him a kayin. And that's true for all of us. The things that we think, how could Hashem do this to me? Why me? No, for you, because that's how I'm straightening you out. And Pinchas Elio, he would be Kohen Gadol for years. So Shlomo Kalina says, because Baruch Hu said to Elio, ah, you're too tough on Jews. What are you saying that? For that, you're going to have to go to every bris. Elio's by every bris. So Elio said, I'm big Kanoi. I'm big Zelo. I'll be by a bris. I'll see the father doing the wrong thing. I'll go, who knows what I'll do? Okay, I'm Moichel the father. What about the Moil? Moichel the Moil. What about the Sandik? I'll be Michael the Sandik from all the Zaveris. He won't say anything bad. What about everyone's that? I'll be Michael all of them, right? So Shlomo Kalina Taich, he says that Pinchas Elio, Pinchas is Elio, and it says, Tachas Asher Kine Lelikav, Yechaper El Bnei Yisrael. Tachas Asher Kine Lelikav, because he's a Kanoi, and he has to come to every bris. So there's no choice other than Yechaper El Bnei Yisrael, that the Yidden have to have a Kapara. So it says that the Neshama of Nadav and Aviyu went into Pinchas. Zeshtet. And that's why he's called Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Akayin, because Nadav and Aviyu was in him. So Memela, he's Taka ben Aaron Akayin. Nadav and Aviyu, what did they do? They were Moira Locha Bifnei Rabbi. They didn't ask Moshe Rabbeinu first. He goes to ask Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't tell you what to do, but this is where you act on your own. This is where you could act on your own. That was the ultimate tikkun. So the Avodas Yisrael says, Pinchas was Zeichet to the Neshama of Nadav and Aviyu, and Aaron. So Aaron is Nun, Nadav and Aviyu, and the word Haran. Because Aaron was in a Shama of Haran that was in Zgalgul and Aaron. Oh, it's getting too complicated for me, right? So who are we? And the answer is it's irrelevant who you are. We'll find out who we are. But whoever you are, it's your nisyonos, it's your tests that are creating who you are. You know, the Velt says of art, when Pinchas is in the Haim, Weintman. When Pinchas is in the friend, Lachman. When Pinchas is home, we cry. When Pinchas is not at home, we laugh. Anyone know answer to that riddle? When we read Parshas Pinchas, when it's Parshas Pinchas, it's always the 3 weeks. But all year, Yom Tov, we read from Parshas Pinchas. The two are linked to each other because one paves the way for the other. Because if we take the difficulties of life and we put them into perspective, that gets converted to bracha. So this Achash Shalti has a shaila, this Gabbai, has this big, tremendous shul someplace in Eretz Yisrael. And he goes, how am I going to put away all these svarim after Yom Tov? Whoa! And a bachur says, I get them put away for you? Yeah, give me 400 shekel. You got a deal. It's hours of work, don't worry. Don't tell me how to do it. Bachur goes up on the bima, bangs down. He goes, Rabbeisai, such a chil Hashem that these svarim should lay on the table like this and everyone goes home. You're threatening the schar of your limit of Torah. He goes, you're right. The whole place picks up the svarim. In a second, everyone puts it away. He turns to the Gabbai, 400 shekel. So he has a whole shaila whether the Gabbai had to give him the 400 shekel. I thought you were going to work for hours. He says, what's the difference? How I did it, right? He wants to bring a raya from Shimon Meshetach, who told Yana, I was Matur Neder, I do it my way, you pay for the Nazirim. So he brings it from Rav Karelitz. He says, Lamai said this guy was Oivir Ganeva Stas. That's not what the Gabbai meant. And you don't have to pay someone if he's an Oivir Chacham, okay? But the shortcuts don't work. So I want to share with you this story. This guy thinks he's going to be a big builder. I'm going to be a big builder. He was an assistant plumber. He knows how to build. And he has an uncle that's a big builder. He has all the inns in here. So he's going to build on Bar Ilan, those big places. Yeah, Tanuva, he's going to be his man. And he borrows tremendous amount of money. And he goes and he takes ads, and he's really wants to sell the apartments ahead, you know, get the money ahead of time. He's going to start the whole process. The bulldozers are there, and no one is buying apartments. No one is buying. He can't believe it. He's in such a rut. He can't believe this. He's so embarrassed. He's there. He hired a whole office, all these people to take the calls, and they're sitting there klutzing. The only calls he's getting is anyone needs jobs, and he has Mishalachim coming that maybe wants to give them their Meiser money, but again, no one's buying apartments. So his uncle sees he's in trouble. His uncle says, no one trusts you. Okay? You don't. No one knows you're a builder. I'll tell you what I'll do for you. On a big hill, on right off the highway, I want to build a villa. I was going to build a villa. I'll give you the job of building it. People will see you build it. Who's he building? Oh, he's building for his uncle. He'll get a name as a builder, and then I'm taking a chance. I'm willing to go for it. Thanks his uncle so much. He says, his uncle, how am I going to give you money for supplies? He says, yeah, I'll give you $500,000 for supplies to start with, whatever. 6 million shekel, whatever. He says to his uncle, but are you going to pay me for the work? Pay you for the work. So I'll tell you what. I want you to be careful how you spend the money. So any excess money that's left, you can keep. So he was a little too careful how he spent the money, you know? He bought rusty beams, and he bought rusty pipes, and he bought some, he took all, everything. Now, this villa, Lechayra, should have stood for 30 days and it would come crashing down. But he figures, hey, for what he needs, it's good, right? And then he winds up keeping all the money. If he's using faulty parts and he's using, third-hand products. So that's how he builds it, you know. And his uncle comes for Shabbos and he leaves and he goes, well, worked. I made so much money. Matzah Shabbos, his uncle calls, I want you to come over to the villa right away. He goes, no. He says, listen, you got to face the music. And he comes and the uncle says, we have such a beautiful Shabbos. Ness is still standing. He goes, we decided we're giving this villa to you. You should have it for you and your children and your grandchildren to always live here. And he goes, what's the matter? And somehow the truth slipped out. They said, get out of here! Okay. Now, this is a mushel. It is not a true story. That could be, it is a true story. But this is the story of our lives. The Rebbeinu Shem says, you want shortcuts? It's not going to hack it. You want to cut it all even? It's going to look real good. But guess what? The ceiling is going to be crooked. Now, trust me. Where you are in your life, and the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs and the mesiras nefesh that's necessary for you to do for someone else is really those are the things, Mezeh Shemiz Baruch, where you are.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.